inviting me to give the talk, and certainly to thank Spencer for removing so many blind spots in our vision of mathematics. I have no serious result to talk about, so it will be kind of a rather entertaining talk, which may be appropriate for the occasion. Uwe yesterday explained some intricacies about the Milner block cutter conjecture, and I would try to give some musings around it. Actually, I recall that the conjecture says that suppose that we have let K be our base field, so we consider the Galois cohomology of K with coefficients in, say, Unruh twisted sheaf of Unruh twisted Galois models of root of unity. So we take n equal same n when n changes this form in algebra, and the Milner block cutter conjecture tells, well, at least that it is generated by the degree one component which is the same as the quotient of multiplicative group of the field by its nth power by Hilbert 90. And as we mentioned, there is a generalization. Well, this thing is a particular case of a formula for motivic cohomology of K with finite coefficients. Which tells that if we send this motivic cohomology to Galois cohomology, then this would become an isomorphism for cohomology in degree less than n, and just and zero in higher degree. Well, this formula was suggested about 25 years ago by Steve Lichtenbaum and me, and this is a particular case of that formula, and there was a great work done by Vyvodsky, Soslin, and others for proving and announcing this result, so I will assume it to be true. And this formula is kind of peculiar for the way it was proved. First, it was reduced by Soslin and Vyvodsky and Geiser-Levin to original block cutter conjecture, and then it was proved using quite difficult geometry and motivic theory. This formula was proved, and it's a little bit amazing that a general formula which involves motivic cohomology would not be much easier than to prove in whole generality, just directly, not at the right part. And also another kind of philosophically strange thing is that this is a kind of it's a formula, and it does not say, at least directly, something about the category of motifs. It's not a kind of a very particular case of some general statement about motifs. And what I would like to talk, or rather muse about, is what What kind of general statement about the category of motives could be behind this formula? As far as I remember, when this formula came to mind, it came just as there were some computations in, motifs were not in vogue these days, so it were computations rather in Quillen's K-theory, to try to incorporate them in some reasonable general format. And kind of a first amazing first property that was known for hierarchy theory, that it does not satisfy any reasonable descent property. And this kind of, so descent property would tell you that if K is algebraically closed, then this motivic cohomology is coincide with this Tate twist. And this was known, or maybe known a little bit later, I don't remember. It was a beautiful theorem of Suslin. It is extremely beautiful argument proving this. But then we should have some kind of Galois descent, and Galois descent didn't work. If it would work, it will provide you the formula without any truncation. And truncation was just the first guess, which obviously failed, and a kind of argument that suggested at least that it was not absolute nonsense was that from this kind of complexes you can construct a cohomology theory. Now I would like to ask in what sense could one get, maybe it's for the reason that the descent does not work, not for the reason that it does not exist, but for the reason that we don't know how to formulate it. Well, I will not give any answer, but just maybe pose some questions. How could Galois descent in the world of motifs look like? Maybe first, let me say that just some very general words about descent. So we have the category of motifs, say Vygotsky, defined following Vygotsky. You can consider all motifs or effective motifs, I don't care, over K. Here we played with, compared the motifs over K with those of algebraic closure, but I would rather fix a finite Galois extension, say, K over K. Well, it could be profinite, but just for simplicity, assume it to be finite with Galois group G. Fine. Then we have the category, similar category of motifs over K large. And certainly the symmetries of K, the Galois group, act on this category. What we would like to have is a kind of a procedure which in the best situation would just recover us this category from this. Now what else do we have? We have certainly the pull back and push forward functors, just extending scalars and considering motif over K as a motif over K small. So just standard functors which are adjoined. The first thing which one usually says when talks about motifs is that we note that given an object here, certainly its pullback to K large will be invariant with respect to G. A more precise thing is that we can define the category of G equivariant motifs over K. I will not give a precise definition, for it requires one extra structure. We don't we should play actually with DG version of the theory to define it. Well, and then it's relatively standard how you define. But the key thing is that naively objects here are just motifs here. So we have a forgetting of equivariant structure functor, and when we compute given two objects M and N here, then to compute morphisms between them in G equivariant category is the same as to compute first morphisms between them as between plane motifs. On this thing, the Galois group would act, and then we should compute the Galois cohomology. That's a general feature of Galois cohomology of G with coefficient. That's a general kind of formalism of equivariant category. And certainly the pullback functor actually lifts the functor from the motifs over K to equivariant motifs. It's essentially evident manner when we define this gadget, and a naive formulation of descent property, which is wrong, would tell you that this functor is actually an equivalent of triangulated categories. Again, this is perfectly not true, and the reason for this is that there exist motifs over K small, which are killed when you consider the pullback to K large. And this functor actually does not kill. It kills nothing. So this means that the kernel of this pullback functor is the same as kernel here, and it's non-trivial. Fine. That's exactly what we would like to fight here. Let's consider this kernel. Let's denote it dm of k small with zero sign. So it's a full triangulated case again here. And certainly the pullback functor yields a functor between, so it's a thick subcategory between the Verdier quotient of this model of this into them. Well, now the first kind of property which one might hope that it holds is, well, it's kind of a very weak descent property. Well, let's call it conjecture, but it's maybe too proud for this. Namely, that this functor is essentially an equivalence. Namely, that it induces an equivalence between the idempotent completion of this category. That's denoted, it's Cherubi completion, denoted by the letter kappa, and this category. It's a non-trivial statement. To show that, well, let me give you a taste of this statement. In the very what it means on a very trivial part of the category of motifs. Namely, let's consider consider the subcategory of Artin motifs inside of DM of K. Well, namely, I would like to consider those Artin. Recall that an Artin motif is the subcategory is a thick subcategory generated by motifs of extensions just finite extensions of k small. And let's consider only those extensions that sit in between k large and k small. So we can consider all matches of this type. And they generate a thick subcategory, which I would like to call in this manner. Now, the usual Galois theory tells you that such k primes are the same as finite sets on which the group G acts transitively. And therefore, we can linearize certainly this functor which assigns to k prime the corresponding motif, and we get a functor from the category of permutative G modules. I recall that a G module is permutative if it is induced from, if it's, well, a direct summand of the direct sum of representations induced from a trivial representation of a subgroup of G, or which is the same as modules of Z-valued functions on finite G sets. Mm-hmm. So we have this category. Yeah. Just for simplicity, let's assume it's finite. You can spell it out in profinite, but I don't care. It's finite. Well, so we consider permutative G modules, and again, it's an important completion of this category. Then we can consider it's an additive category. We can consider the bounded homotopy category of complexes, and just the thing defines you the functor to the category of Artinian motifs, and a very simple theorem of Wawelski tells that this functor is actually an equivalence of categories. So we have a very, very simple, explicitly defined subcategory inside of K of the category of motifs. Now what is this fell? What do we come to on the right hand side? Certainly any Artinian motifs of this type being pulled back to K become trivial. Yeah? Because if you pull K prime to K, then you will get just direct product of copies of K. Yeah? So therefore, naively, any pullback of the fellow to K large will be trivial. And therefore, if we consider the part of the equivariant category which leaves over trivial part, just a billion group inside of there, then it will be the bounded derived category of finitely generated G modules. Okay. So this thing now sits inside of well, and certainly we have the corresponding functor that I wrote here. It just produces you a functor from this fellow, Artinian, model of those complexes in the homotopy category which are acyclic. And this is your functor. And this naive part of this conjecture would tell you that this is an equivalence of tangulated categories. And that theorem is due to Rafael Rukia. It's not an evidence theorem. But it's true. And sorry, I should put here, I passed the quotient, and then I should again put the important completion. Without the important completion, the statement is wrong. Okay. So in a sense, this very weak descent property asks for a generalization of the theorem of Rupkier. Well, now comes the true problem. So even suppose that we know this is how to recover. We are not interested certainly in the quotient, but we are interested in the actual category. And so the problem is how to recover VM of K. So we essentially, this conjecture tells you that it's an extension of VM of K0, an extension of equivariant category, which I assume to be, let's assume that it's known. And you may ask how to construct this kind of an extension. And certainly, if we would live in the very best of the world, this would be an extension that characterized some kind of universal property. I don't know how to write this property, but let me just comment how, in principle, extensions of one triangulated category by another can be constructed. That's just a small homological algebra digression. So suppose that we have two triangulated categories, maybe with DG structures. I don't care on this level of precision. So we have D, we have C, and this would be our D, and this would be C. And we ask how one could construct extensions of C by means of D. Okay. And there is one way if we do know D, and again, so here in this setting, I assume that C is known, but D we would like to construct from C or maybe from whatever, but still assume that D is known. So suppose that we have such an extension, D, I don't know, T, and goes to C, and how one would construct it? The easiest situation to explain how one constructs it is to suppose that actually this projection admits adjoint functors, both left and right. So the kind of situation to have in head, I know that homological algebra is bad for your stomach. So usually people in this situation assume that these are something like sheaves on a topological space. And these are sheaves supported on some closed subspace, and these are sheaves on the open complement. So let me denote it by J upper star, if this J would be an open embedding, and this would be the left adjoint J lower sheik, and J lower star will be right adjoint. Otherwise, no way to understand the thing. So suppose that you have this left and right adjoint. Then to such extension, they correspond naturally a functor, namely certainly just by adjunction there is a natural morphism from J lower shriek to J lower star. Both compositions of J lower shriek and J lower star with J upper star produce an identity functor over C. Yes, and the projection of this morphism to C is also identity. And so, if we consider the Kuhn of the thing, then this is a functor from C a priori to T, but it actually takes value in D. Now a not difficult exercise in homological algebra tells you that actually such an extension which admits the adjoint functors, is object the same as exact functors from C to D. Again, there is a small grain of salt that in order to make constructions, you should leave the picture on DG level, but again, I don't care on this level of precision. So such an extension is the same as such a functor. In general, Or you can say it actually in a little bit more from just to see it from a little bit different perspective, that actually given D, then there is a universal actually extension which contains D as a subcategory and with some quotient category. And this extension is a pullback from this universal extension. Actually, this universal extension is constructed in a very simple manner. So let it be a remark. And actually, there is an extension of Z by Z, and this will be T universal. And objects of T are just pairs of objects of Z and the narrow between them. No, I construct a universal thing, and mine will be pulled back from this universal. Okay? So consider the category of all morphisms. Then there is certainly then there is an evident functor from this to D, which maps the thing to colon. Well, and you see that this functor kills those morphisms which are isomorphisms. And isomorphisms are certainly the same as objects of D. Yeah? Okay, and this is a universal extension, and any extension like this can be constructed as pullback from this extension by a functor from C to D, to this D in the bottom, this copy of D which sits in the bottom, and that's actually exactly this construction that I described. That's for functors which admit adjoints. In our situation, this functor, well, I should have said that dm means geometric motif, so this satisfy finiteness condition, and this adjoint functor, they spoil all finiteness in our situation, but there is a simple variant of this construction where you should consider some kind of, instead of, in general, if you want to consider extensions which do not, in general, admit adjoint functors, you should enlarge here. The corresponding universal extension will be here in the quotient. There will be not just objects of D, but some kind of infinite objects of D. Maybe, well, 2T universal large, and then in the quotient will be, it's kind of, let me call it state objects of D, and this kind of objects which are inductive and projective limits simultaneously. But let's not care it precisely. Now let me just explain what those adjoint functors mean in our situation. And they're very simple to describe. So suppose that we have an object M in, I don't know, M sitting here. Then we could consider its push forward. We forget for a second the G action, the G equivariant structure on it, and consider it as a motif over K. Let me denote this functor as pi lower star. Well, this was an now let's consider the G action. So our M was an equivariant object. So G acted simultaneously on K and on M. Now G will continue to act on the direct image, which is a motif over K small. But now G does not act on K small. So this is merely an object with an action of G. motive with G action. Given a motive with G action, we can consider homology or cohomology of G with coefficient in the fellow. Well, more precisely, certainly we should consider the whole cohomological and cohomological complexes. The cohomological complex of G with coefficient P lower star M, and we can consider the cohomological complex of G with coefficient P lower star, or P lower star M. Yeah. And the functor J lower Schick, that's exactly the functor J lower Schick applied to M. And that's exactly the J lower star applied to M. Well, and there is a standard morphism, which certainly everybody perfectly knows. And this functor that describes the extension of the cone of this morphism, and again, certainly you know that the cone of the morphism from homological complex to cohomological is called Tate homology. So this is Tate. So the cone is a Tate homology. And I would like to think of that this functor from equivariant motifs to this kind of vanishing motifs is a kind of universal Tate homology functor. Now, I have no idea how to interpret this word, and that's my question to you. So, in a sense, the problem of descent, it asks for understanding of what Tate homology of equivariant motifs is. Well, now that's exactly one half of my talk, and now I would like to switch the gears and talk, again, unfortunately, I do not know how to pursue this idea, so it's just maybe it's just for fun. Now I would like to look at the very same problem from a little bit different perspective. And certainly, this musings that are presented, they don't explain at all why this strange truncation comes in this formula for material cohomology with finite coefficients. Now, I would like to move closer to this truncation. Okay. First, let me remind you. Certainly you know this, but still let me remind you how Vygotsky constructs the category of motifs. So he starts with the category of smooth varieties over K. Now he considers, a larger category, he embeds it into a larger category, which is now additive category, the category of finite correspondences. So if you have, it has same objects, smooth varieties, but morphisms now here are finite correspondences, which mean that these are correspondences from X to Y such that the graph of this correspondence is finite and, surjective over each connected component of X. Yeah? So that's an additive category. Now, the next step is, to embed it into a larger DG category. So that's additive. Now, the next thing will be DG. And here, again, it has same objects as smooth schemes, but morphisms are enlarged. And this is A1 homotopy localization or the construction of due to Suslin. Maybe let me denote it for, to be sure, just core with the sign delta. Well, delta is the very same thing that Mark used, and namely, I recall that all these algebraic versions or of standard simplices that Mark mentioned today, they form a standard cosimplicial scheme, and therefore we can take morphisms here look like this. We should take correspondences between x times delta dot, so this is cosimplicial scheme, and with values in y. So this is a simplicial abelian group, and so, well, we can take a normalization or whatever. Now, well, you should take a little bit care, so the composition of this kind of homotopy morphism is defined a little bit up to homotopy, but again, that's over precision. It's essentially you can compose it, so you get a DGK. Fine. And now the next step, there are two steps that provide. Now the next step is again embedding. We enlarge this DG category to have all possible cones and the like. So we form its what they call pre-triangulated completion. Yeah. And that's again an embedding. So it's very stupid operation. So you consider we have a DG category, we consider just essentially complexes of objects and, well, standard. And the last thing is localization with respect to the, well, either the Riske or Nisnevich topology. The answer is the same, and I'll say Nisnevich localization. Well, actually, I should consider here, well, whatever. So, and we got the answer. So that's the procedure to define it. Now let's try to insert, well, in some way, the descent in this very construction. You can do it in this manner. So we can pull back our x and y's to k, and consider correspondences there. Or, which is the same, certainly, we can consider just plane correspondences over our base field k small of x times, now again over k small, now of delta dot pulled back to k into y. Now let's look at this thing. So we pulled back our varieties to k large and consider the morphism. Certainly, because our everything came from k small, the Galois group will act on this complex. That's a complex of G modules. So here, well, I should put, sorry. So I pulled back to k and considered Suslin complex over k large.
I understand, but then on the y, what's the Kapiolsky index on the y?
Yes. But that's the same? That's the same?
What category are you in? What's on the right? Y is over little k.
If you have two schemes over k small, and you extend coefficients to k large over the argument and consider morphisms over k small, this is the same as to consider both pullbacks and consider over k large. No. Y over k small. Both schemes x and y live below. Okay? So x and y live here. Yes, that over small k, and that's over large k, and that's just identical. Okay. Sometimes it's convenient to write it in this manner. We will see. Well, that's a complex of G modules. And therefore, we can consider the Galois cohomology. Okay. Just a complex of cochains of G with coefficients in this fellow. Well, let me not write it. Okay. Now, you see that, well, now you can multiply cochains. And therefore, you see that this cochains actually, you have a DG category now, a new DG category for which, instead of correspondences over k small, we consider the correspondences over k large of varieties defined over k small, and consider the Galois cohomology. Certainly, you can compose such a thing. But now, because now, now what I would like to do is to consider the truncation and take tau less than or equal than zero. So therefore, and this certainly you can also multiply, and therefore we get a new category, which is important for us. Again, its objects are smooth varieties over k small. Matmorphism is defined in this manner. Well, let me write it as I wrote on the right. Okay. Oh, sorry, I should put cochains. Pardon? Yes, I take cochains. Cochains and then tau less than equal than zero. Okay? So this complex itself, it sits in negative degrees. Cochains go to positive degrees. So somehow you truncate along the diagonal. And again you can compose it. So you get a DG category. For which, certainly, I should have said that if instead of cochains I would take just G invariants, then this would be exactly our all correspondences defined over K small. But here I would like to take, instead of G invariants, I would like to take cochains, and then I would take truncate the cochains. Okay. Fine. So therefore I get a new category to which this category over K DG category naturally maps. Let me put theta. It's not terribly nice thing for the reason that objects of the thinker is very much the same as objects here. But morphisms are larger, and essentially we are now playing with descent for morphisms, not for objects. Well, still, we have the thing, and now we can apply all this pair of constructions passing to pre-triangulated category and past initial localization. Earlier we applied to this, but we can do it also for this thing. Okay. Now, let me formulate a conjecture. Conjecture would say that it's an equivalence of category. Maybe let me formulate it in a more concrete way, that The formulation will be like this, that suppose that our X is, well, say semi-local. Then this map is a quasi-isomorphism. Well, pre-triangulated, well, it means nothing, but this is the statement about equivalence of triangulated categories obtained after these two passages is equivalent to this concrete statement. That suppose you take for X, well, it's a little bit stronger. Suppose that you take for X just any local scheme, local smooth scheme. Then you should have this equivalence, this quasi-isomorphism. I don't know how to, well, I don't know how to prove it, but I suspect that first that the facts that we know due to Vygotsky, Rost, and others, they may imply the statement. What I would think is more easy to do is to go in the opposite direction and to deduce from this statement the formula for the Matievic homology. You see, this formula is somewhat, I would think it's much more flexible than to play with the formula with Matievic homology, the classical, the standard formula, for the reason that first, you can consider any Galois extension and not necessarily passing to algebraic closure as this old formula does. And second, it's a statement about categories. You can have unitarity with respect to X and Y, and if instead of Y you will put the Tate complex, you will get something very close to, probably in case when Y is the Tate, is some tensor power of Tate model, you can deduce this fact from, I don't know, but I would think that you can deduce it from this formula for Matievic homology. But still, I would think that it's much more flexible and easier to conceive. Well, now the last thing that I want to do is to reformulate this conjecture in concrete terms that you would see what it means when you just in particular case or just playing with it.
Push this board up.
Ah, yes, okay. How one can reformulate it? Let's consider a standard simplicial set UG with a 3G action. So UG M simplicis is just G power n plus 1. Yep. You can take the quotient modulo action of G, and this is BG, yes, a simplicial classifying space, and this projection is a torsor, is a G torsor. Now We can consider in topology, people usually, well, classically they don't consider simplicial sets as just the data of sets, but they consider their realization. They're playing with topological spaces you define from a simplicial set. And recall that you just basically you take the set of n simplexes, take its product on the coordinate n simplex, and glue the data together for all n using the standard simplicial maps. Now you can do the very same thing in algebraic geometry, replacing standard coordinate simplex of topologies by standard coordinate simplex of geometries, and so we get the realization. Now, what kind of object this is? Certainly, if we consider truncated thing up to degree n, this will be a nice scheme, which is obtained by gluing together several copies of affine space according to all this data. And if n grows, so in the limit, we get an int scheme. What is the structure? We have a free action of G on the fellow. Therefore, we can twist it with any scheme on which G acts. Now take for this scheme the spectrum of K large. The result of this twisting, so we get, how do I denote it? By T, was somewhere. Let's call it E, okay? See, that's again an int scheme, which is obtained by gluing together copies of affine spaces defined over K large. But the gluing maps, they include the action of the group on the base field K. Okay, so that's the structure of this. But still it's a nice object. Now I recall that if we would live in the world of in topology, then taking the twist, so we take direct product and take quotient model of action of the group. So it's a direct product of our space with action of the group by something contractible on which the group acts freely, and then we take quotient. And therefore, this thing would bear the name of the homotopy quotient of spectrum of K model of action of G. Okay, so E is a algebra geometric version of the homotopy quotient. Fine. Now I'm at the end of my talk. Now observation. Suppose that you have any sheaf F, any pre-sheaf F, on the category of smooth schemes. Now, then, we can apply this pre-sheaf. In principle, we can apply it to any int scheme. Just saying that int scheme, we can write down f of, for example, of our fellow, that's the only thing I need, of E. And to do it, we just say that it is a projective limit of f of x, where x may be mapped to E, and x is smooth. Or in concrete terms, we should take for x, it suffices to consider for x just copies of these planes from which E is glued. So it's just projective limit. So we essentially we have a section of F over each of these affine plane which are compatible in the thing. Well, so that's a very kind of stupid construction, and I recall that you will probably map them, for example, how in topology, how Sullivan defined well, simplicial differential forms, say, on simplicial sets, they're defined exactly in the same manner. For each simplex, you have a polynomial simplicial form, and they're compatible in the stupidest sense. And certainly for the word polynomial simplicial form can be replaced by any pre-sheaf, and you get this cell. Okay, good. Now, the observation. So that was rather notation. And the observation tells you that that if we put here, so let me formulate it, that we can do two things. We can consider F, pre-sheaf F, and consider its values on the standard cosimplicial scheme defined over K large. The Galois group acts on K large, so it acts on this fellow, so it acts on this group. Yeah? And well, and then we can consider the chain, co-chain complex, and we can truncate it. Okay? And now the claim that it is the same as if we take F and consider this as Lean complex for F and compute its value on E. Well, I should put not an equality, but there is a natural quasi-isomorphism. Okay, so that's observation. So therefore, now let's take for F which assigns, say, to U the correspondences from X times U to Y. And put the thing there. And then you see that the right-hand side could be interpreted as of this conjecture. Guess can be written in a little bit different way, namely, those are the same as correspondences from x times e to y. Oh, sorry, this is Lean complex, so I should put delta here. Okay? Good. Now, therefore, this conjecture essentially means so that suppose that x is just a point for simplicity, then this thing defines you. We can define a motif of E in a way that home from this motif to the motif of E of Y for any smooth variety y will be given by this formula, will be given by the Suslin complex. Yes? It's not a standard. The usual in Vygotsky theory, there is a notion of a motif of any non of any well scheme, of a scheme of finite type. But this thing is different. So in his picture, so this thing is much more rigid. So you consider correspondences, for example, from E to Y, which are strictly compatible on just true correspondences from E to Y. And he considers kind of homotopic things which gives you not that the answer will be basically not truncated cochains. But here you get exactly truncated things, and therefore this thing could be, if you wish, reformulated, that the motif of E considered in this manner, the motif of homotopy quotient of K large model section of Galois, is exactly the motif of point of K small. Probably it doesn't help to prove anything, but at least to reformulate. Now let me just say a most particular case of this statement, which has to do with a Chow group of points. So suppose that Y, for example, I don't know, is smooth, compact here, and X is just a point. Then one part of this formula, the thing, would compute you the complex, one of Spencer's complexes, which would compute the higher Chow group, and so that on the right part it will be the Chow group of zero cycles. Yeah. Now let's look what happens here. So there we had two zero cycles defined over K small up to rational equivalence. So here we consider a different data. Here we have cycles on our Y which are defined over K large zero cycles. But it has property that if I conjugate by any element of the Galois group, well, that it will be fixed by the action of Galois group in Chow. So this means if you have a cycle which is fixed by the action of Galois in Chow, this means that you can provide linear homotopies between this cycle and its conjugate by the action of Galois group. Now here we do provide this linear homotopies, and moreover we have all higher homotopies that if you move this linear homotopies by the element of the Galois group, you have compatible two chain that covers it, and so on. And you consider these fellows up to the action of, up to rational equivalence in a natural sense, evident sense, up to A1 homotopy. And the conjecture says that in this situation, you get actually true, Chow group of zero cycles. So if you have something which is a cycle which is rationally invariant with respect to the action of Galois group up to all higher homotopies, then it should come from actual cycle defined over the base field. And I have no idea how one can prove it. So that's it.